There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1066, October 22nd, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max sprints to victory on Saturday. Scuderia Ferrari hang him high on Sunday. We have 60 place grid penalties in a 20-car field. Only from the mind of FIA. Marc Marquez is the wonder in land down under. We shall explain, gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, unbiased British press go ballistic on Norris penalty. Perez once again on the chopping block. Lewis Hamilton seems a little tired of his Mercedes. And Fernando, on reaching 400 Grand Prix, he says the cars are easier to drive these days. And this week's interview, Le Mans driver, Daytona 24 Hours driver, WEC driver, Harry Tinknell. And yes, I must remind everybody that we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, sir, it was very nice to be back in the Formula One paddock. Thanks to Netflix, even on Friday, the paddock was full of people. Every other person had a VIP pass. I am guessing these are people, Formula One's A-list customers, who buy these paddock passes for whom thousands and thousands of dollars for a ticket is like buying a pack of Tic Tac for Joe's six-pack. Very minty. Like somebody said, these are not race fans. They are here for selfies and autographs and to make a statement, I was there. But I guess it takes all kinds to make this world. And of course, what was expected was delivered. One of the first persons I met on Friday in the paddock was Ollie Bearman. Very nice, friendly chap. I had met him earlier also a few months ago. And he said he will be happy to talk to me for 10 minutes if I can get the approval from Ferrari. Knowing asking for an audience with the driver racing in the Grand Prix on Sunday was going to be a complete waste of time and energy, I thought speaking to a reserve driver may be possible. Oh boy, Oberto, the reaction I got from the team PR person made me feel like I was asking for an interview with an astronaut during the countdown. The lady did not go ballistic on me, but thinking I have not given them enough lead time, I suggested in my own silly wisdom if we can do this in Vegas. The reaction was more of the same. I guess at the races they are only interested in talking to broadcast media. Before I went to Texas, I had contacted several of the teams by email, and response I got normally was, all media appointments are already booked. But here is the good and positive. At F1 Weekly, the pursuit is relentless, like the African wild dogs. So I will make another attempt this week, giving them 2-3 weeks of lead time, for a 5 to 10 minute audience in Vegas with some people. And of course, this does not include current Grand Prix drivers and see what can be done. I have already received an email from the lady Fabiana, who is with Visa Cash RB, previously known as Toro Rosso, that she will try to get something going for me in Vegas. Obviously, no guarantees, but we'll take whatever is available. Then later in the day on Friday, I approach Sami. He handles affairs for Mika Hakkinen. The first thing he said was, "I am very sorry for not responding to your email." So that gave me some hope. And then he said, "If you come tomorrow morning to the McLaren area, I will arrange an interview." And he did come through, and it was good to sit down and have a brief chat with Mika. His daughter Ella is doing well in karting these days. I also met Tim Mayer. He is the son of Teddy Mayer. I told him about the trip the original JB and I made to Longford, Tasmania. And Tim is, of course, named after his uncle, Tim Mayer, who was killed in Longford. Tim is based in Atlanta and was one of the stewards in Austin. If he is in Vegas, I will see if I can do an interview with him also. Time will tell. Speaking of JP, the one who drove for Braun GP, he told me he was busy as he was at work, which is true, doing work for Sky TV with your favorite racing driver of all time, DP, as in Danica Patrick. So we will have to make another try in opening up the button. I think best chance with him would be not to try him at a Formula One race, but maybe at a sports car race. I also had a very nice long chat with Tom Christensen, the Le Mans legend. He told me his son is involved in driver management and one of his clients is Robin Freins. And Robin Freins was a very good racing driver in single-seaters. Unfortunately, he did not make it to Formula One. But I think right now he's racing in Formula E. Met a lot of people, including Bob Varsha in the media center a couple of times, many other people, including your homeboy, Monsieur Julien Fabreau. He is the commentator for Canal Plus, and he is the gentleman who did that incredible commentary on the final lap of the Italian Grand Prix, which was won by Pierre Gasly. I told him we have played that last lap commentary a few times on our podcast, so he was very impressed and thankful. And here, Sir Mr. Rogers, never thought I would see this day in Formula One paddock. Out of nowhere, I get an email from a lady saying my email information was provided by somebody and if I would be interested in interviewing a DCC who is an avid Formula One fan. Now, DCC in this case means Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. Hee-haw! How can I turn down this wonderful opportunity in the Texan community? So we have another F1 weekly first. We have interviewed racing drivers at airports, and this is now conversation with a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, which I'm so happy about. And this lady was really interested in Formula One racing because I saw him. On the backside of the media center, you can go and you can see the last corner of the track. And there she was, taking pictures and enjoying the motor race. Moral of the story is, keep your chin and leg up. All is not doom and gloom in the F1 paddock. My sincere thanks to Mr. Paul Velasco of GrandPrix247.com and Formula One media people for this opportunity. The media parking shuttle from the car to the media center made life very easy on my AARP legs. All I can say is borrow a line from Captain Antonil. Do that to me one more time. Once is never enough. On to the Saturday sprint race. Colly, this was interesting. Max on pole and his teammate Checo, first man outside the top 10. Meaning he was behind Yuki Tsunoda, the two Haas cars, and Franco Colapinto. How sad is that? As the piano man would say in a song, JFK blown away, what else do I have to say? I say Dr. Marco did not start the fire. but he may fire him. Your thoughts on the sprint race, sir? And will Checo be KO'd by Dr. Marco at the end of the season? What say you?
Well, the sprint race was exciting, and I was surprised to see Max on pole, but apparently they have repaired a few issues. And I'm not sure what's going on with the adjustable bib, but that is one of the issues. But no, it was an exciting sprint race. I'm glad for Max. That gave him a little bit of a jolt back into the championship standings. And yeah, I mean, what's going on with Checo? I mean, all the articles say the same thing. You need to be closer to your teammate for the Constructors' Championship, and he's just unable to do that. And when we go to Mexico, he better perform well or his father could have another health issue. So please, Checo, please. We need a 1-2 in Mexico. Por favor. Back to you, Nas.
Now we talk about the race, the United States Grand Prix at Austin, Texas, 2024. The winner, Charles Leclerc. Very impressive, sneaky job in turn one on both Max and Lando as they were trying to deny each other the race lead. Lando took the pole by a tiny margin, and I had a discussion with a journalist in the media room, French journalist, just before the start of the race, actually as the lights, red lights were going on. And we both agreed that Lando will not win the race, and we also agreed Max Verstappen will be the winner. Well, we were both wrong on that one, as Monsieur Monaco Charles Leclerc had other ideas. I was pretty sure one press of the DRS button and Max will be gone, like the sprint race. But Leclerc shut the door on that as well. Your thoughts on the start, sir? Were you surprised Lando and Max did not take out each other?
I was surprised a little bit, but Max knows better because the criticism would be just ridiculous. And we saw what happened in the British press that are extremely unbiased and fair, of course. No, I thought it was awesome. It was an intense start. I still think Norris could have been more aggressive in blocking Max, but you have to give it to Leclerc. He sees the opportunity. He seizes the opportunity, and he makes the opportunity work for Ferrari. So I think he's becoming a better and better driver. And like you said, it was a lonely drive, but it was a beautiful performance. I'm so happy for Ferrari. A 1-2 in Ferrari in the United States Grand Prix is a beautiful, beautiful thing. So the whole weekend was wonderful, and I'm really glad you were there. Of course, I'm jealous that I did not get to interview the Dallas cheerleader, but hey, c'est la vie.
Max was expected to pounce on the prancing horse after the race went green following LCH spinning out all on his own. But Leclerc kept his lead and within a lap was outside the DRS zone of Max.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I kind of expected that this was going to happen. I knew that Max would go all in into turn one. I knew Lando would try and do absolutely everything to defend to Max. And so I went a little bit wider in entry to prepare the exit. And that was a winning bet, which helped me quite a bit for the rest of the race, because then I had free air and we were very, very fast on that first in. So then it was all about managing the gaps. A lonely race, but I hope we can have other very lonely races like this in the future, because it's a good feeling.
For once, we did not have spaghetti culture during the race. The Pirelli tires were ready for the prancing horse when Leclerc came into the pits on lap 27, his only stop of the race. He and teammate put on a good, close and clean combat in the sprint race, and Carlito was back in town to give Ferrari a 1-2. First Ferrari win in Texas since 2016, when Kimi Raikkonen recorded his 21st and final Grand Prix win, and it is first Ferrari 1-2 in the US since the 2006 US Grand Prix at Indy, when it was Schumi winning and Felipe Baby second. And you and I were there. Sainz Jr. was second, first podium for Carlito since the Austrian Grand Prix in June. He will miss his red ride next season. When he came to Ferrari, he hit the ground running and was quite a match for Leclerc. He has won a few important races for them, and I expect him to be the top dog at Williams next season. Ferrari may have done him wrong, but sun will come up for him and for everybody else alive and breathing on January 1st, 2025. Max Verstappen, based on his victory with authority from downtown Austin in the sprint race, looks like Red Bull has found their mojo. It is mind-boggling that Mighty Max has not won a Grand Prix since the Spanish round, and that was in June. Winning the sprint race and then finishing ahead of Norris on Sunday has put a big dent in his hopes of becoming McLaren's first world champion since LCH in 2008. Third place in Austin gives Max 110 podiums in Formula One. And listen to this, Mr. Rogers. 110 podiums for Max. In other words, he has been on the podium in almost 54% of his races. Simply lovely and simply incredible. You may ask yourself, does he have a teammate? The answer is si, senor. He was 9th in the sprint race and 7th in the Grand Prix on Sunday. In the championship, one Red Bull driver leads with 354 points. The other driver is 8th in the championship with 150 points. The gap is just way too embarrassing, or I would say way beyond embarrassing. It is no wonder Honda is now requesting Red Bull to give their boy Yuki a test in the Red Bull car and hopefully promote him to the least desirable position in Formula One, and that is being teammate to Max. I think somebody should tell top man at Honda Racing, Koji Watanabe-san, be careful what you wish for. Just might come true. Mr. Rogers, if Checo is dropped by Red Bull, who would you like to see as his replacement between Yuki, Liam Lawson, and Colapinto?
Well, to be honest with you, I think Yuki Tsunoda deserves this spot, this test. I think he's going to get it because I think Honda's right. Perez languishing mid-pack is a perfect opportunity to give Yuki the shot, and if he fails, which is predictable, at least he tried. And you know, those are the biggest regrets. If you don't try, you know, you don't have a shot at it. So let's go, Yuki.
Frankly, I don't think the problem is Checo. And the problem was never Pierre Gasly, and the problem was never Alex Albon. The problem is that guy in the other car. He is just damn quick. And that's all there is to it. So no matter who they put there, that guy is going to get slaughtered big time. Now we go to Lando Norris, man who started from pole position and finished fourth. Tremendous dicing with Max in the closing laps. Passing Max on the track has never been easy and never will be. Some say Lando does not have the killer instinct, but job number one of any driver is to bring the car home, which he did. Regarding the 5-second penalty, I think both drivers going off track should be taken into consideration, like Lewis and Max at Interlagos in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I didn't give the position back because we thought we were in the right. Clearly we weren't. I still think we were, considering Max went off the track. Normally if you defend your position and you go off the track, you have to give the position up. In that case, I was ahead. I kept my position because he needed to give it back. And that's the way it is. So I think I did the correct thing. But I don't make the rules. Max drove well. It was a fun race between us. Good battle. And yeah, he defended well. He did everything he had to do.
I think Lando is championship material in a championship package. And as we have seen, even the very best don't win if they don't have the best package. Winning the championship this year was always a long shot for Lando, given the start Max had in the early stages of the season. I am very happy we are not seeing dirty driving like teammate rushing into Max to help his comrade, and that's never good. It does look like both Lando and Leclerc have a problem winning races from pole position. You know, here is the situation with Max. If he's on the front row in second, if you block the inside, he's just going to go brake late on the outside, grab the lead, okay? And if you try to block the outside area, give him any opening, he's on the Ayrton Senna program. If he sees a hole, he's going in and he's going to brake later than any driver on earth and grab the lead. So it's lose-lose situation if Max is on the front row with you. Lando's teammate Oscar Piastri was fifth. He was lacking dingo bite in the Grand Prix, but future is bright for this young man from Melbourne, Australia. Now we come to everybody's favorite, LCH. Oh, the misery and the Hamilton humanity. He was in the kitty litter on one of the opening laps, and he said, which something got my attention, he had never spun before in a race. We may have to get Inspector Clouseau to investigate this. The tremendous, tremendous recovery drive he had in Istanbul was after a spin in Istanbul in a GP2 race, also known as Hapidos. But to be fair to him, I do not remember if that spin was all on his own or maybe he tangled with somebody. So we will dig into this and find out if Lewis Carl Hamilton has ever spun before on his own. And he did go off the track in the German Grand Prix in 2007 when the crane lifted his car. I don't know if he calls that spinning out, but not a big issue. You can't argue with a guy who has 105 Grand Prix wins. Thank you very much. But LCH gets my vote for the best quote of this month. And you know, we're all always scanning for tidbits and famous last words. Speaking of his dream and desire to have a race in Africa, he said, "Everyone takes things from Africa, but nobody puts anything in." Historically, man has a valid point. But sitting in his million-dollar penthouse in Monaco or Manhattan, I don't think he understands reality on the ground for the common man in Africa. Sad but true, even oil-rich African countries like Angola and Nigeria have not provided basic amenities to their masses. And we will stop there because this is not a political show. Next, misery loves company, George Russell. He was off song and finished sixth, 56 seconds behind race winner. Toto Wolff called the 5-second penalty on George a total joke. Obviously, no love lost between Toto and FIA. Sergio Perez was seventh. The last time he was in the top five was when he finished fourth in Miami, and that was on May 5, and here we are sitting in late October. He needs to do a serious andale, andale, or it's adios amigo from Dr. Marco. Nico Hülkenberg was 8th for Haas, second point scoring finish for the Audi-bound driver in the last 7 races. And here is some interesting information, Mr. Rogers. Speaking of Audi, I had a chat with a German journalist who said he had his doubt on this program from day one. Reason being too many changes at the top. And now that VW Group, which Audi is part of, is looking at massive layoffs in the fatherland, it puts their F1 project in the same place as Mercedes when they wanted to enter Formula 1 in 1992 with their own car and local chap by the name of Michael Schumacher. Problem has been, or was in the case of Mercedes, you cannot lay off thousands and thousands of people on Monday and on Tuesday announce we are going Formula 1 and fishing with Lawrence Stroll. That will definitely not go down well with Deutschen folks. Moving on, once upon a time, in the season of plenty which you have forgotten, 2007, Fernando Alonso discovered a new BFF. In the season of 2024 in Texas, he found a new bucking bronco, Liam Lawson, in his first drive since Daniel Ricciardo was dropped After the Singapore Grand Prix, the driver from New Zealand charged his Visa Cash App RB to ninth place finish. Mr. Rogers, is this the dawning of the age of Kiwi Cage Rattler, or will we have peace in Oviedo in our lifetime?
We will have peace. Everything's going to be fine. Fernando just had to have a little talk with Liam, but no, the worst part is the Aston Martin has gone so far back, and we're so far away from the success they had in 2023 with those 8 podiums. And I'm afraid that Adrian Newey has so much work to do that Fernando could very well be in his late 40s by the time this car is competitive. So we'll see what Honda can accomplish with Adrian Newey. Maybe they could repeat what they did at Red Bull, but I have some reservations. But poor Fernando.
Final point from 10th place finish was taken by Colapinto, Franco Colapinto. They are no longer crying in Argentina for the next Reutemann or Fangio. Colapinto is making a strong point to be on the F1 grid full time. For the sprint race on Saturday, he got his Williams in Q3. Very impressive. He is doing what is expected of young, good drivers when they reach the Piranha Pool. Instead of coming up with one excuse after another, like the tide was against me, he has hit the ground running. And I sincerely hope he can carry on the momentum, because it will be very nice to see a driver from Argentina back in Formula One, competitive driver.
Very pleased, of course. I think more than the point, I'm happy for the pace that we had and for how strong we were in the race. When we had clean air, we showed that... after a very tough Saturday for us, we bounced back stronger and we showed the pace we had in the car, and I think were one of the strongest of the midfield. That's really positive for us, what we were looking for.
Hate to say this about Colapinto, but he is really making Logan Sargeant look bad. Albon already has a big problem coming his way next season, so I don't think he is going to worry about Colapinto in 2025. There is some talk that he, being Colapinto, may join Audi, but I don't think they will give him a lifeline in 2025. I heard from a couple of insiders, one of whom is a sponsor in Formula One, that Mick Schumacher may get the second seat at Sauber because of Binotto-Schumacher connection, and we're talking Schumacher as in Michael Schumacher back in the day, and also because Sebastian Vettel is also pushing, like he said, very hard for Mick to be back in Formula One. Nothing against Mick Schumacher, but like Sargeant, he had his opportunity for more than a season. I am sure he did his best, but unfortunately it was not enough. This apple did not fall far from the tree, but it rolled into a different orchard, and I think that's where the problem is. Sauber team is based in German-speaking part of Switzerland. With Nico Hülkenberg and Mick Schumacher as teammates, the operation will be total, what you call, Fliegel-Flugel. Would you like to see Mick back in F1 orbit, sir?
I sort of would, just for the memory of his papa. But let's face it. Like you said, he had his chance. He crashed a lot, caused the mechanics to work hard. Look at the mechanics at Williams right now. They're practically on vacation, so I don't know. And, Audi does look suspiciously almost naive to the fact that, yes, VW is laying off thousands, and they're taking this on. So nothing makes any sense, but it is Formula One. It never does make any sense.
Now we come to points to ponder. The first Grand Prix in Austin took place on November 18, 2012. LCH was then a one-time world champion and won the inaugural US Grand Prix. That same afternoon, 1,300 miles away in the parking lot of Rio Hotel, Las Vegas, sounds familiar, Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, and Daddy's little Jim Clark were racing in Scusa Super National Go-Kart Race. George Russell was large and in charge before he was hunted down and passed by. And this comes straight from Ripley's and Daddy's amazing but true file. Winner was Lance Stroll, and I was in Vegas that day to witness this historical moment. Alexander Albon has reached 100 Grand Prix starts in Austin, so that's good for him. But here is the biggest point to ponder, Mr. Rogers, at least for me. And this happened on Sunday after the race. So initially I was in the media room, and about an hour later I ventured into the paddock area full of people, and a lady approached me and she asked me, I'm not making this up, she asked me if I was famous. So I told her I am very famous, at least in my own mind. And she says to me, well, I'm asking because I've been observing you all weekend and you have been hugging a lot of people. Interesting how people observe even little clown killifish in the piranha pool. And speaking of pool, shall we dive into a beverage break and take a break and then come back with Motorsports Mondial?
Good idea, Nasser. I'm a little swath myself, so why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Felipe Massa. You are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and we shall start Motorsports Mondial with a chit-chat, and for that we go back to Road Atlanta for Conversation of the Week. Today we have sports car driver Harry Tinknell in the Palatial Studios. We first interviewed him when he was in karting. He switched to sports car racing after a spell in British Formula 3. I hope listeners enjoy this talk, and my thanks to Tinks for his time.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Road Atlanta with our old Buttonville buddy, Tinks. You look peachy happy in Georgia. How is life in the fast lane for Harry Tinknell in the 2024 season?
Yeah, that's great to be back. Great to see you again. It feels like Buttonville was a long time ago, and in some respects it feels like it was only yesterday, you know. So, testing form of BMW, getting ready for career in car racing, so it's pretty surreal. I think it's like nearly 18 years later now. Was it 2006, 2007? Sort of time, maybe 17 years. So, yeah, here with the Ford Mustang GT3 program in IMSA, and I'm also racing Proton Porsche in 963 Hypercar in WEC. So, it's been a busy year, it's been exciting, and happy to say the results, especially in the Ford, have been really strong second half of the year. I think we are the top point scoring car for the second half of the year. We've been really consistent. We've had two podiums in a row the last two races, and we are second in the Endurance Championship. So we're here at Petit Le Mans. This is the last of those races this weekend, so hopefully we can end on a high.
Great. Now, before we talk more motor racing, something more important. I understand you are a daddy now. How old is your kid, and is he already making racing noises?
He's 11 months old, nearly a year. He's a year on the 21st of October, so yeah, it's a pretty whirlwind. I was actually at this race last year, and then I was flying back at 5 a.m. to be back as soon as possible in case he was early. But luckily, he was on time, and yeah, it's great. It's obviously a huge life change, and of course, I'm away a lot, so you know, I don't like being away for too long now because, you know, he's learned a new skill. You know, he's either waving or he's smiling or he's crawling, and now he's walking. So, but yeah, it's absolutely incredible. He charges rounds, doing laps and laps of my living room on his walker. So I don't know if that's a sort of preparation for doing laps of a track. But yeah, we'll have to see on that. But he's definitely a determined little boy right now. So yeah, it's really cool.
Did you name him Jensen or Lewis?
Should have been Lando, really, shouldn't it, really, in the modern day. But no, he's called Frederick, so yeah, maybe after Frederick Vavish, my teammate here in the Ford. But no, he's great, and he's doing really well. I appreciate the question.
Well, I hope he discovers racing at Silverstone and not in Sardinia like Papa.
Yeah, that's a good memory, mate. But yeah, it's true. I mean, it's funny, I'm really looking forward to him, like, coming to the races and being able to understand what it is and everything. So in some respects, I wish he was five already, but at the same time, hopefully I've still got a long career ahead of me. And he's already been to Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar. So he's been to a few racetracks already. So he started off a bit better than me at Dunk as well and Clay Pigeon.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, some years ago you gave Mazda their first win in GTP, which was very impressive. How big was that win for your career, Yost Racing and Mazda?
Yeah, it was a huge moment. Obviously, I think Mazda hadn't won a race for 7 years. I was brought into the program alongside Ollie Jarvis to try and help bring the program on. Yost came on board, obviously, you know, huge success of Audi at Le Mans. And it was still a bit tough at the start. And, you know, we had some near misses and some opportunities. But then once we finally got that first win, it was like almost like a huge relief. And it was like a weight off our shoulders. And then and you really felt that because we then went and won the next two races as well. That's in Canada and Road America. So it was a huge moment. And I think I really realized when the program stopped that how many fans we had and how everyone was supporting what they saw as the underdog. You know, it's a much smaller manufacturer, Mazda, compared to the ones we were competing against. But, we were the plucky underdogs, and it was great to get loads of victories in that car. But the first one was super special.
You won the 2020 12 Hours of Sebring. Where does this victory rank in your list of achievements?
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, you know, when you drive into Sebring, they have like the Wall of Champions, and you go there and you see the names on it, you know, like Stirling Moss and Fangio and obviously, you know, Tom Christensen and Allen and, you know, all the greats really of sports car racing. So and in racing in general. So it was kind of like a real surreal moment to see your name there with all these great drivers. So yeah, of course it's one of the main three or four sports car races in the world. It's one of the most demanding tracks on the car and the driver. It was so bumpy there and high speed, but it was a surreal moment again. But every time I drive in the track, I just smile and know my name's on that wall. Yeah.
Which brings me to my next question. How many aspirin pills you have to take during and after the race due to the bumpy nature of the track?
I remember the first one I ever did, I think we finished fourth and we were on for a good result in the last pit stop. We had a little clutch issue. I think we had to bump start the car. But I remember waking up the next morning. I was gutted about the result. And then I sort of went to get out of bed and go to the shower. And I could barely walk across my hotel room. So it's definitely, it shakes your feelings out for sure. You know, you want to have a good dentist and have a good checkup before it gets to March and you get to Sebring. But it's funny when you first go out there, you know, your eyeballs are like moving inside the socket almost. It's so bumpy. You know, all the vibration and everything is just massively excessive compared to what you're used to. But it's funny how as the weekend goes on, your body kind of adapts. You almost sort of like move with the car a little bit, and then it's almost like the bumps aren't there anymore. And then you go to a normal track the next week, and you're like, oh, this feels a bit nicer.
Yeah, since we are at Road Atlanta, I have to inject an American humor here. No shortage of dentists in England, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this place is also pretty bumpy. I think it's got more bumpy as the years have gone on. But it's Petit Le Mans. It's very different to Le Mans, but at the same time, that doesn't make it any worse for me. This is actually one of the best races in the world.
Okay. Speaking of Le Mans, you have raced there and Daytona 24 Hours also. What is more exciting, going over 200 miles per hour after midnight, the Daytona banking or flat out at Mulsanne?
They're both incredible. For me, this is going to sound strange, but one of the most peaceful sort of feelings I have each year is driving down the Mulsanne at 200 mile an hour with just my headlights lighting up the road, with no other cars around you. It's just incredible feeling. I remember when I was speaking to Chip Ganassi when I first came over to do my first Daytona in 2017, and I couldn't believe the angle of the banking at Daytona. You really are looking out the very top left-hand corner of the windscreen, because that's all you can. If you look straight ahead, all you can see is just tarmac. You know, so the track is so banked, you're just looking out this tiny little corner, and that's why we need the spotters, because if there is an incident ahead, they're telling you way before you can see it, even though it's only maybe 200 meters up the road. But for me, Le Mans is super special. You know, it's the home of endurance racing. It's the Glastonbury Festival of Motorsport, shall we say. There's always a huge support from the British fans. You know, there's a massive traveling contingent that go down, you know, Aston Martins and Porsches and Ferraris, all with British number plates on the French motorways. So it's Le Mans for me, but Daytona's a close second. Yeah.
Now, Le Mans, since you like it so much, you've been there so many times, done well. Have you developed a taste for escargot?
Yeah, I'm not really a snail's man, to be honest. But no, try and keep it to pasta and brown rice during the race week. You know?
That's good. Okay, speaking of Chip Ganassi, you also race for his team in the beautiful Ford GT. What were the highlights of this partnership, and how did you find what they call here Chipster as team owner?
Yeah, it's super cool. I remember Chip delivering his team speech before Daytona 2017, and he said, if a meteorite comes down from Earth and hits your car during the race, maybe it's not your fault. Everything else is your fault. And it was a bit like, oh, wow, this is an interesting motivational speech. But no, it was really cool. I mean, obviously, you know, huge history just being able to spend time with him and listen to his feedback and everything. I think it helped me as a driver. And obviously, the Ford GT was a fan favorite car, absolutely beautiful car. It was very successful on both sides of the pond. And, you know, I was very grateful because that was my first sort of proper factory deal within sports cars, and it led to everything that's come since.
Okay, when it, you know, in sports car racing, you have a teammate. When it comes to setting up a car,
yeah,
which driver has the most say? I'm sure different drivers have different style. How does, say, a compromise is reached, or you just tell them, hey, I'm number one, screw you?
Absolutely, yeah, this is my car, so you adapt to me. I think, honestly, they try and pair the drivers. I think when you first come into a program, try and pairing them on driving styles, and if they get on, if they're sort of similar stages in their career, speak the same languages, everything like that, you know. So I'm actually paired with two Germans here, but my German's not really coming on too amazingly this year. But yeah, I think obviously, you know, you got to compromise, but at the same time, I'm lucky with Mike. You know, he and I always kind of say the same thing about the car and want the same thing from the car.
Mike Rockefeller?
Absolutely, yeah, Mike Rockefeller. He's obviously, it's cool driving with him. You know, I was doing European F3 in 2013 when the year he was DTM champion, and we were supporting those races. And
I remember those days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it at that time, all they wanted to do was DTM, because, you know, you're on that package, and it's, you know, Hockenheim 80,000 people, Nürburgring 100,000 people. You know, so it's cool to be driving with him now. But yeah, you just have to, you both go out and feed it, and then generally just try and move the car in the same direction that you both wanted. If there is sometimes a massive difference, then, you know, one side has to give up a little, one side has to give up a little as well, you know. Like, even with the seat, you know, Mike's a lot shorter than me, so he needs a little bit different requirements from the seat that I do, and we have to just try and meet in the middle the best way possible. At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is the car having its best position possible. We don't really care if it's me in the car or it's him in the car, I'm qualifying, he's qualifying, whatever it is. As long as it's best for the car, we don't mind.
Who decides who starts, who finishes?
It's the team, but honestly, we're old enough and ugly enough now that we kind of decide it a little bit ourselves. So we just said at the first race of the year, okay, I'm going to qualify, and then we just alternate it from there each race. So that means it's simple, and you turn up to the weekend and you know, right, this weekend I'm qualifying, I'm starting. And it means that, like, in testing and stuff, you can pre-plan who gets the new tires and the low fuel run, and who's doing the fuel saving runs and the longer runs and on older tires, whatever. So that's the way we do it, but everyone's a bit different.
So there is no towel fight like Milka Duno and Danica Patrick?
I don't know that story. You have to inform me of that one. But
I'll send you a YouTube link.
Okay, fine.
You know the story of shoe on the track?
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be like that sometimes, but honestly, I think in a professional team and in a well-oiled machine like Ford Multimatic Motorsports, you know, we this is how we do it, and I think it's been successful so far.
You know, motor racing is very global. You are traveling, I travel now and then. All of our listeners, a lot of them travel. Very important question: when crossing the pond,
yeah,
who serves better tea and crumpets in the air, British Airways or Mr. Branson?
Well, British Airways has that partnership with Tiptree, the jam, you know, okay. The very British jam, you know. So I would say maybe British Airways has that one. But you know, Branson, you know, with the red planes and everything, I think they're pushing hard. You know, I sort of probably 50-50 on both, but I would say you know, you can't beat a bit of British history and quintessential British style. So I'd say British Airways.
Okay, cool. Okay, your manager, I believe, is still Mr. Alan McNish. What is he up to these days, and how involved is he in the Audi F1 program? And I'm going to Austin. Will I see him there?
yeah, he's still very involved with me. He does all my deals, all the negotiations. He still gives me advice on driving and everything, you know, outside of the car. So yeah, he's a very big part of my team and big part of the reason that I've got as far as I have in my career. So yeah, very thankful to him. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he has been involved with the Audi program for a long time as a driver, and then as a Formula E team principal, and obviously now it's super exciting to go into F1. I mean, I am, of course, you know, I'm with Ford, he's with Audi, so there's a certain line that we never really cross in terms of like conversation. So I actually don't know right now exactly what he's going to be doing at Audi, but yeah, I've seen him at a few Grand Prix this year, so if you're lucky, you might bump into him. But I know you're at Monaco Historic the other day, so I don't know if you saw him in his hometown.
No, remember, I think you told me he's in Berlin that weekend.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah. I mean, he's also traveling 300 days a year, so it's kind of crazy. But, yeah, he's, yeah, it's going to be an exciting time for him as well, with whatever he wants to do. And I think everyone's excited to see how Audi do when they get into F1.
Yeah, okay, you have an autograph session coming up in 4 minutes, so last question.
No worries.
In 2025, there will be four Brits on the F1 grid, Lewis, Russell, Lando, and Ollie Bearman. At the end of the season, who will be most merry, according to Harry?
We're not counting Albon anymore, then. Is he Thai now? Albon?
Well, yeah, he says he's Thai, which okay. I don't buy it, but, you know, okay, we give him benefit of doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's super exciting to see Lewis at Ferrari, see how he gets on there. Hopefully he can be winning again. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of Russell. I think he's very, very fast. I think he's the hardest worker in the paddock almost. You know, Mercedes has been up and down a little bit this year, but he's getting the most out of it. But I would like to see him. But honestly, I'm very impressed with McLaren and how they've developed the car. You know, I last year, when they were at the back of the grid, and then you see them this year being at the front, or sorry, the end of last season being near the front, not quite winning, but on the podium. As soon as I saw them in the top six at the start of this year, I thought, if they continue on the same development rate this year, they're going to be winning. And look what they're doing now. So, yeah, I wouldn't bet against Lando. But it's very exciting. And obviously, Behrman did a great job in Saudi. And we're all excited to see how he gets on.
You know, George is a great talent, but I'm a little disappointed in all his time with Lewis. He hasn't picked up any fashion sense from Lewis.
I mean, I'm in the F1 paddock a bit now as well, because I'm doing the hot laps for the Ford on quite a few races. And yeah, the big baggy trousers and stuff, all the F1 drivers are sort of going for that sort of style now. I'm not really sure on that, but I think George is sponsored by Tommy Hilfiger, so I'm sure there's someone in his team who could dress him pretty good.
Last question, you mentioned Albon. How do you think he will do against Carlos Sainz Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, Carlos is probably my best friend on the F1 grid. You know, we drove together Carlin in British F3.
I remember those days.
Absolutely. And yeah, I saw him a few times in the last two seasons. And yeah, it's really cool to see him doing so well. Obviously, yeah, it's a complete change for him of Williams, but I think it's gonna be really good. They got two really strong drivers now, and I think, you know, Albon was looking super strong. Obviously Colapinto's come in and being quite close to him, so it's gonna be really interesting. But I think I really rate Carlos. I think Leclerc is one of the best drivers in the world, and you look at how close they are. So, yeah, be very interesting. It's an exciting season in store next year.
Thank you very much.
Harry, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Now we go racing on two wheels, Australian MotoGP from Phillip Island, not too far from Melbourne. Starting from 13th on the grid, the max of two wheels, Marc Marquez won the race on a private Ducati. Fellow Spaniard Jorge Martin was second, with Italian Francesco Bagnaia third. Next round is this weekend in Buriram, Thailand. In the championship, Martin leads with 424 points. Bagnaia is second on 404 points, and Marc Marquez is third with 331 points. I would like to see Marquez get another championship, very deserving, as much as I would like to see Lewis Hamilton get another championship, very much deserving. And now, sir, a word about Andy Suchak. Some of our listeners will remember him from his racing days. He raced in the old Formula 2, which was started by Max Mosley, and cars were built by Williams. He won the Formula 2 race at Brands Hatch, in which Henry Surtees was killed. Andy wrote a very moving letter addressed to Henry, which was posted on Formula 2 website, And of course, I remember that very well. I met him in Austin and we talked about this, and he is now the circuit manager. So I told him, you know, one of these days I'll make a quick run to Austin and sit down and have an interview with him. Next, penalties galore. Even the organizers of the US Grand Prix are not safe from the wrath of FIA. They have been hit with over a $500,000 fine because of track invasion by some fans. I think there were like 200 fans who came on the track while the cars were on cool-down lap. As always, it only takes a few stinkos to mess it up for all. Now, here is the important question for you, Mr. Rogers. Would you climb a fence and drop in front of car 14 to show your passion and amour for machismo?
I would have to say, if I was very, very young and maybe had a few too many Pabst Blue Ribbon beers, but no, it's so unsafe and people are crazy, but they get enthusiastic and it's sort of good. It's good for F1 that people want to be out there and be part of the whole scene. So it's bad for safety, but it's good for fandom and Formula One. So it's a tricky two-bladed switchblade knife. So you got to be careful. But yes, I understand the fans' passions. It is exciting.
But wait, there's more. Pirelli had commissioned an Italian artist by the name of Matteo Machiavelli, surprise, surprise, to design trophies for the podium finisher in the Pirelli-sponsored US Grand Prix in Austin. At the last minute, copyright issues got in the way and these trophies were not awarded. The design was too close to some other products out there, which reminds me of the lawsuit against Liberty Media's F1 logo. We need an update from Morgan & Morgan in Minnesota, home base of the plaintiff 3M. We need to know if the issue has been resolved or have they put scotch tape on it. Next, we have famous last words. Today, they come from Mr. Excitement, Gunther Steiner, and I met him at Austin at a brief chat. He was busy, so could not do an interview, but he's very friendly and of course, a funny guy. This is his opinion on Lance Stroll. He said, and I quote, "Lance passes completely under the radar. You never speak good or bad about him. He's just non-existent. Obviously, we all know that he doesn't need to drive a race car. He's all right financially. So maybe that's what it is," end quote. Mr. Rogers, if you had billions and billions of dollars in Bank of Cayman and Bank of Geneva, would you be driving race cars and testing in faraway places 7 in the morning? Let's be honest about it. Okay, before we wrap up the show, here are the top 3 in the Drivers and Constructors Championship. Max leads the championship with 354 points, 7 wins so far this season. Norris is second with 297 points. His maiden win came in Miami this year, and he also won in the Netherlands and Singapore. Total of 3 wins so far in 2024. Leclerc is third on 275 points. Like Lando, he also has 3 wins. Monaco, Monza, and now Austin. And the beat goes on. In the Constructors' Championship, we have McLaren-Mercedes at the top with 544 points. Both drivers have taken race wins. Second is one-man show with Max Factor at Red Bull on 504 points. Of their 504 points, 354 of these points scored by Max. Very nice, but not surprising. Third is Ferrari with 496 points. Both drivers have provided race wins, and one of them, he's off to Williams at the end of the season. Round 20 is this weekend in Mexico City. Last year, Max won the race, and his teammate and local hombre was out on the opening lap because of a Greenspan moment. Irrational exuberance. Let's hope we see Perez on the podium so his people can enjoy La Vida Loca. And that brings us to Musical Mondial. Today, we have one of the best from the Lone Star State in the Palatial Studios. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy Stevie Ray Vaughan. He is caught in the crossfire. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Keep up the good work, Nass. Good night.